Good afternoon. This is Linda Galash, and you're listening to the September 2nd, 2011 edition of Catalyst Radio. It's the weekly program of Community Media Center as joined with our online citizen journalism project, The Rapidian. CMC's Catalyst Radio brings you interviews with organizations working on social change and community support, announces events and local efforts, and provides our media update about the media. Joining me each week to sift through the media news is Denise Chang. Today, our in-studio guests are with 106 Gallery of Calvin College, the gallery located in Downtown Avenue for the Arts. Sarah Baker is with the gallery. Joel Zwart, who will be joining us, is Director of Exhibitions with Calvin College. Up first, it's our media and free speech news report. As we've covered, as well as lots of media has covered recently, News Corp has been accused of phone hacking in Britain. And now it's coming out that it's been known here in the United States that News Corp's been under investigation in the past for some of its privacy breaches here in the country, largely to do with an advertising arm of the firm.
Back a couple months ago, News of the World, which is owned by News Corp and Rupert Murdoch, was actually found to be tapping the phones and the voicemail of some of the people that they were following for their stories. This became really prominent when they found that one missing girl's voicemail was being deleted, and it was linked all the way back to News of the World. Since the News of the World has been shut down by Rupert Murdoch, who doesn't feel that it is him who is accountable for what had happened. But in the meantime, it has raised concern in the U.S., most notably early on with this whole debacle happening, that there were concerns that September 11th victims' phones had also been hacked.
And what David Carr of the New York Times is reporting, and then he actually followed this a number of years ago because he is the media reporter for the New York Times. What Carr is saying that the Justice Department was involved in looking into what's called News America Marketing, the marketing branch of Rupert Murdoch's News Corp. And what they found at that point was that there was the accusations of some heavy-handed practices that were to eliminate their competitors at the time, and that News America Marketing was in the process of trying to buy out a competitor that went before the U.S. Justice Department, and the California branch of the Justice Department kind of gave it a thumbs down, saying that it was probably not a good idea to eliminate the competition and the competitor. It was then sent to further up in the Justice Department, and it was somewhat fast-tracked, according to Carr, and was approved. Carr points out that at that point at the Justice Department was Joel Klein, and this was around 1977. He was with the Justice Department, and Joel Klein has since become an executive vice president at News Corp. So stopping short of exactly saying that Klein was doing favors for somebody that would become his employer more than a decade later, it did bring up some suspicious situations. That, again, is an article by David Carr in the New York Times. And then a little bit more on a story we've been covering over the past few weeks. It was back in March that AT&T announced its plan to acquire T-Mobile. These are two wireless companies, respectively, number 2 and number 4. This would really give AT&T the advantage. That proposal for a $39 billion purchase of T-Mobile, that's been sitting in regulators' hands. The Federal Communications Commission and the U.S. Justice Department have to weigh in and approve or not approve this merger. Back in March, a former FCC official even said that it seemed likely to be approved. Just within the last few weeks, there's a snag in that now. It looks like a document that was accidentally leaked by AT&T's attorney. This happened by the FCC requesting some information, the attorney posting it on the FCC site, and it contained a little more information than they had hoped to send. And they intended to redact information that indicated that AT&T, even before this merger was announced, had already planned to expand their services into the more rural areas. Now, the main argument for AT&T to take over T-Mobile has been that this would allow them to expand their services into the more rural areas. So with the leaked document indicating that the merger really is not about that, it does kind of put the merger into question. And an additional sign of further troubles for this merger to go through, the U.S. Justice Department earlier this week filed an antitrust lawsuit, citing concerns for customers, primarily T-Mobile customers, and that their service, their quality of service, would be decreased through any such merger. And we pull our information from The Atlantic, DSL Reports, The Wall Street Journal, as well as Wired Magazine and Bloomberg. You can go to those links to find out more. A project called Digital Public Library of America is in the works. It's being put together by Berkman Center for Internet and Society that's housed at Harvard University. And they're making some progress, been looking at the cost to do this, and also are looking at taking in some proposals for the architecture of the lending library. Denise, being digital, tell a little bit about what this library would be like.
This library would unite the documents, records, all cultural and scientific from multiple institutions all across the country. A lot of these institutions have resources that aren't really duplicated at other institutions, so it would make all of those documents publicly accessible, and the Berkman Center is leading that charge. They have been, for the last year, soliciting proposals, doing some research, just scoping out what it would cost to support something like this, and they received over 60 submissions and narrowed it down to about 8 statements of interest. And these proposals really look at things like how a digital lending system would function, as well as things like how a search would work, because it's not just a library catalog, it's also people who don't necessarily know what they're looking for and are putting in keywords. So search terms, indexing, that kind of stuff. So this project is a very large undertaking, and there isn't very much that's out there that's exactly the same. There are some things that are similar, like archive.org and a couple of other major institutions, but in terms of an actual digital library, that has yet to be established.
Core 77 recently gave a glimpse into the changing world of materials cataloging, and it's in a feature about Rhode Island Institute for Design's Materials Library. We've talked a little bit about this kind of thing before, how libraries are working, and with the digital age, how that is changing.
So the type of library that we're generally used to are things like the Grand Rapids Public Library, where it's publicly funded and it falls under the purview of the city or the state. But there are actually a lot of different types of libraries out there, from tools libraries to materials libraries, zine libraries. And the materials library is really something that you're going to find in mostly design schools. A lot of these systems that we're used to seeing are things like the Dewey Decimal System, basically materials, content being categorized by topic. And what librarians, these sort of non-traditional librarians, are finding in materials libraries is that you can't really go through and categorize and catalog things to death by the type of object it is. For example, a student isn't going to come in and ask for something like, I want to see all the types of wood you have. They're really looking at texture. They're thinking in terms of texture, in terms of density. They're going to see something like, I'm looking for something that has a harder surface but is still pliable. And that brings up a whole wealth of materials that kind of cross the spectrum from wood to metal to synthetic materials. And it's just a very different way of thinking about media and thinking about materials when it comes to physical objects rather than books as the physical object.
And that wraps up our media and free speech news report for this week. When we return from the break, we'll be talking about the 106 Gallery. In studio with us is Sarah Baker and Joel Zwart. Thank you. today in the Catalyst Radio studio. We're going to be talking about the 106 Gallery that's affiliated with Calvin College, located down at Division Avenue for the Arts. Welcoming to the studio today, Sarah Baker with the gallery and Joel Zward, Director of Exhibitions at Calvin College. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on Catalyst Radio. And let's just start with sort of a description of what 106 Gallery is.
All right. Well, the 106 Gallery is a gallery and studio space on 106 South Division. It hosts studios for faculty members, and it also, on the main level, has gallery exhibitions year-round.
How long has that been going on? How long has it been?
It's been around since 2005. Before that, the building was an empty space, and then it was renovated for live-work spaces, and then Calvin kind of took in the main level and the lower level.
Well, either one of you can address this, but let's talk a little bit about why Calvin College chose to be a part of the Division Avenue for the Arts area and having that gallery space a little bit located a little bit differently, kind of in the heart of all that art district.
Right. At the time, in the early 2000s, there were a lot of art shows popping up for weekends at a time. They were calling them free radical shows, and they had art in different empty spaces along the avenue and also in some of the businesses. And I know that some Calvin students were showing art there and other artists in the area, and it was kind of this great opportunity for people to get together and show art. And so when that opportunity arose for, you know, there to be a gallery there, Calvin decided to have that as a space. And we thought it was a really great opportunity because it's a chance for students and Calvin to kind of have some art and an appearance down there and to be involved in a lot of those different activities. So.
How about sort of a description? Just give us a picture of what that gallery looks like, where it's settled right down there in that district.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's in the Martineau building, and it's on the corner of Oaks and Division. So right on the main level is the open gallery space. And then there's four faculty studios, so four of the art professors have some studio spaces there kind of in the other quadrants of the building and in the downstairs level. In the main level is the gallery space. And then downstairs is more of some workspace and studio and things like that.
106 Gallery has been there for how long?
Since 2005.
With you being Director of Exhibitions, Joel, tell a little bit about how this fits into the overall plan for Calvin and its art community there.
Sure. It was an opportunity that Dwelling Place kind of approached us about. Dwelling Place is they're our landlords, so we're tenants in the building. And they were really looking for sort of a large tenant to anchor that building to sort of help bring the arts down to that community, which was sort of an empty community at that point. A lot of empty buildings, not a lot of people living in those spaces down there. And we saw it as a really good opportunity to get our students off campus, to get them downtown, and a great opportunity to kind of return to that area. When Calvin was formed in 1876, the original building actually was downtown. It eventually moved to the location on Franklin, and then in the 1950s, they started building out on the Knollcrest campus, which is a farm, down by the East Beltline and Burton Street, which the campus now currently is. So it was a kind of a way to return back to the downtown area to get our students down there and to get some good exposure, I think. And we saw a great opportunity to tie in then with the local arts community, to bring in local artists, emerging artists into that space, and a research facility for our faculty. So there were a lot of opportunities there for us that we saw, and we were really excited about it. So things have really changed too since we moved in. There's a lot more buildings there that have kind of turned around, a lot more tenants in that area, a lot more retail, a lot more residential. And then within our building, which actually was a building that was a vacant building used for one of those free radical shows that Sarah mentioned earlier. So it was kind of ironic. It was one of the buildings that our students participated in an art show before. And so then years later, it turned into the space that we actually moved into. But we share it with other tenants of Dwelling Place. And those are individual artists who live in these live workspaces above us. They're two floors above us of those spaces. So, you know, it's great to be down there and then also have all these other people who are there who are interested in art, who are interested in creating new things. And we're really sort of a venue. You know, we do shows with our students, but we also do shows with a lot of other artists that we can from the neighborhood, from the community, and from around the country.
Is there a particular mission or goal of that particular space you're mentioning? Also, the community has art there as well as students and some faculty pieces. How would you encompass all of that? What's common about all of this?
Well, it's twofold in the sense that it's a research facility. So it's a place where our faculty can go to do their own work because they teach art, but they also have to have a place where they can do their own art, to produce their own art. And so it's a space for them to do that. And so as Sarah mentioned, there are four studios there for our studio faculty members. And then also the gallery portion of it, which is to exhibit both the work that our faculty and students do, and then also to exhibit the work of artists from the local community and abroad. So that's sort of the twofold approach for us. It's a research space, and it's also this this space to present new ideas, to present new artwork, and then the fact that we're right downtown within this art community to exhibit and to support that art community.
You know, mentioning that you're right downtown there, a part of that community, there's been quite a transformation over the past few years, and it sounds like maybe 106 Gallery was there in some of the earlier days. Can you talk a little bit about kind of watching that area of town transform and being one of the maybe earlier tenants that maybe it was like taking a bit of a risky step and where you've seen that pay off or how that's come out?
Yeah, I mean, Division of Fulton is, you know, it's the center of town. You know, it divides the city north, and that the intersection divides the city north and south, east and west. So it's been very interesting having been here since the mid-90s. I mean, I remember the transformation of this area, of that area of town in particular, since the arena came there. I believe it was in 1995, I think, and how things started to sort of change already then. But since the early 2000s, as Sarah mentioned, when some of those shows were down there, there wasn't a lot of foot traffic there. There weren't a lot of people who were actually living in spaces there. There were a lot of vacant buildings. When we moved in 2005, you started to see that change a little bit, but not dramatically, not overnight. It took a while. Now in 2011, we're seeing regular foot traffic, regular tenants and residents, more businesses opening up down the street. We now have restaurants where before you didn't have restaurants. You had to go blocks in order to find a place to eat. And now there's a half a dozen within, just a 5-minute walk, less than that even. So those are sort of telltale signs that the neighborhood really is transforming. And it's just been exciting to see that happen. And every year something else changes.
I'm a little bit interested in where you see just the arts community itself transforming too, because now there's sort of a reputation for Grand Rapids and Grand Rapids downtown area of being an arts community for a number of reasons, and not only the one that you're a part of coming up in a week, but a number of arts type things. Either way, you want to just kind of talk a little bit about where you see art in the community transforming.
Even just from working at the gallery for the past year, seeing the different art shows going on. They now have the Art Downtown event with Site Lab and that going on every year, every spring, which has been really exciting to see a lot more people coming downtown excited for that event. But also even just along the avenue, there have been some new Lives Workspace galleries on the main level, like Hoi Polloi down the street. They're a music and art venue. Across the street is the Division Avenue Arts Collective, which is an all-ages venue for music and art. And even Sanctuary Folk Art and Heartside Studio and Gallery, there's a lot of exciting things going on with some of those spaces that have been around for a while. But just seeing them kind of really grasp all these new opportunities and chances to kind of do some exciting things with some of the events going on, especially in the summer, like with the arts markets going on. There's been a lot of traffic with people wanting to go to that to see either music or just to look at the vendors and buy art. So I've seen, you know, some of those changes. With the new UICA building being just down the street now on the corner of Division and Fulton, I think that's going to change some things in that people are kind of going there to see art and to see the new place. And with all these other new businesses and restaurants as well, there's a lot more traffic kind of coming down the street, down the south side of Division and into the avenue for the arts district.
We'll just remind listeners, this is Catalyst Radio on 88.1 FM WYCE. Today we're talking about 106 Gallery. It's part of Calvin College, located downtown in the Avenue for the Arts. And we were just talking a little bit about sort of the formation of that and its place in the community. Sarah, you had talked a little bit about some of the art going on around there, and I wonder if maybe now, each of you, we can move into some of the specific types of art we could be seeing down at 106 Gallery, if you have themed events or how it works in with the student community and the faculty community and even with events coming up Grand Rapids wide.
Grand Rapids wide art prize will be coming up soon, and we'll be opening up a little bit earlier. We're opening September 9th on Friday with our art prize exhibition. And the theme of the show is called Indefinite Boundaries, and it all kind of ties into location and space, dealing with either geographic or memory or kind of these like tangible and intangible things. And so we've got 9 artists doing a variety of work, 2D and 3D and performance and video in the space. And then after that, we'll have actually a Masters of Fine Arts show from a Kendall graduate. And then in the winter, we have a education major show of art and a Masters of Art education. I think we'll be showing with them this year.
I think that's a good representation, those 3 shows that are coming up, of the type of work that we show. So we have a student-driven show. We do those, again, and probably about 40% of the shows that are there are shows that are created by either our students that are preparing to graduate or by classes. And some of those shows are curriculum driven. We have local artists. We try and support new work by emerging artists. And so that's a good example. The show that we have in October or late October into November will be the MFA Kendall students' work. And then we also do other artists from around the country and even outside of the country. Art Prize is a great example of that. That's given us an opportunity to really dig into this pool, or reach out and find all these artists who are applying for this, this opportunity, and to sort of seek out and bring them in. So we have artists from all over the United States and 3 artists from Canada in that show too. So of the 9 artists, I think 2 of them are local. The other 7 are from miles away. And so that's a great opportunity for us to bring in these artists from far away. So 3 different kind of groups of artists, artists from around the world, local artists, and then our student faculty.
So being a part of the college, does the space cost for anybody to exhibit? And is there any cost for anybody to come in and view the art? And then do you help sell art there?
Well, there's no fee to come see. We're free of charge. We're a nonprofit. Both the gallery on campus and the 106 gallery downtown are free. We also don't charge artists to exhibit. We have a proposal, a system that we ask artists to go through if they're interested in showing at the gallery, where they can submit a proposal to us for review. I know, Sarah.
And, well, at the 106 gallery, we don't keep any art or have a collection. So each show that's there is just for the time that it's there. They can decide if they want to sell their art, and then we don't take commission. So it's really up to them if they're in it to kind of sell their work or just to have more of a, conceptual, time-sensitive piece. So it depends on the artist.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, with us drawing down to the close here, let's get some of that basic information out there. 106 Gallery, a little bit obvious, but tell where it's located.
It's 106 South Division. It's on the corner of Oaks and Division. And the gallery hours are Wednesday through Friday. Wednesday, we're open from 1 to 9. And Thursday and Friday, we're open from 1 to 6. And
events-wise, you mentioned that starting on the 9th, a week from today, that you're opening up for the Art Prize exhibit?
We will be, yes.
What else do you have coming up on your calendar a little bit further down the road? Or do you have a website where people can check in regularly and see what's scheduled?
People can check out calvin.edu, and they can search for the 106 Gallery. And I would also recommend people to actually go to avenueforthearts.com, which has a lot of the upcoming art shows for Calvin, but also for all of the art venues along the avenue and involved in the avenue and associated with that.
Anything else?
Art Prize opens on the 21st. I think a lot of people know that. So that's also going to be the opening for our show. And then throughout Art Prize, we have extended hours. So we're open 7 days a week for Art Prize. And it's something that has... this is our 3rd year participating, and it's like a lot of the other places in town. It's grown. Last year, we had over 10,000 people through the doors in 2.5 weeks. So,
which was over double from the year before.
Yeah, so. for our small space, it was overwhelming, and it was great. It was gratifying to have that many people come out and be interested in seeing things. So, we're looking forward to a start to the fall with the Art Prize show, and then the MFA show by the Kendall student in October, November, and then into December with our art education students.
106 Gallery on Division in downtown Grand Rapids. Sarah Baker with the gallery and Joel Zwart, Director of Exhibitions at Calvin College. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And up next, we look at some of the events coming to our community over the next several days.
Tonight till 10 p.m. at Rosa Parks Circle is the Soul of the City event, which is a two-day event over Labor Day weekend that features about 30 artists spanning genres like jazz, gospel, R&B, hip-hop, and soul. You can find more information on the Rapidian's calendar.
And then on Monday, the Labor Day Walk Across the Bridges is set to begin at 8 a.m., taking place at Annapolis Park on Michigan. The city of Grand Rapids offers its own bridge walk on Labor Day for those who aren't planning to make it all the way up to the connection of the Mackinac Bridge at the Upper Peninsula. You can join the annual Labor Day Bridge Walk by doing it here locally. Participants can walk as many as 5 miles, the equivalent of the Mackinac Bridge Walk, and cross as many as 7 bridges here in Grand Rapids. More information is available on our website.
And then on Wednesday evening, September 7th at Wealthy Theater, starting at 6 p.m., is the Not Your Average Speaker Series hosted by Rapid Growth. This month's focus will be on fashion, in step with Grand Rapids Fashion Night Out on Thursday, where retailers participate to highlight local entrepreneurship. Rapid Growth has planned its speaker series to highlight the budding fashion industry in Grand Rapids, local makeup artists, all of the things that go into fashion in Grand Rapids. More information is available on Facebook.
And an international folk dancing event is set for next Friday, September 9th. The event takes place at Community Media Center's facility at 1110 Wealthy Street, our Education Rapidian facility as well. Friday night, traditions of all cultures are welcome, and the event is free and open to beginners through skilled level of dancing.
And then on Thursday, September 15th, the Rapidian will be celebrating its second birthday. We'll be at Wealthy Theater to celebrate how far we've come and where we're going, and we'll be unveiling several new features and sharing a few new goodies. For more information, you can check out the Rapidian's calendar.
Music featured this week on Catalyst Radio from local band The Red Sea Pedestrians, their latest disc called Electromagnetic Escape. You have been listening to Catalyst Radio, your local source for independent information and news on the media. We broadcast weekly. It's Fridays from noon to 12:30 p.m. on Community Media Center's radio station, WYCE. Archives of Catalyst Radio shows are available on our website a couple different ways. You can go to therapidian.org or you can go to grcmc.org/catalystradio. Also at grcmc.org, there's information on all the different programs and opportunities offered here at Grand Rapids Community Media Center. With Denise Chang, I'm Linda Galash, and this is 88.1 FM WYCE, Wyoming Grand Rapids.